Hi, Zochi. How you doing?
Hi, doing well. How are you doing?
Okay. I mean, why don't you tell us briefly about two things that overlap with what Curtis is talking about. One, the scandal of the prisoners in, fact, the New Orleans jail system. Mm-hmm. And secondly, the problems of organizations just finding their own members, mm-hmm. let alone finding the capitalist system. You know, how do you begin by just getting your own people back?
Definitely. I think it's been an ongoing problem still for FLIC, for our organization. And, you know, we're seeing it in two different ways now. We were already searching for our members who were lost after Katrina and the disaster that the national government was not able to help out with at all. And then we have now seen a sort of second round because of Hurricane Rita. We have a strong membership in Calcasieu Parish that is now also completely displaced. And we feel, you know, and actually a number of our staff at this moment are homeless or in their homes, which are damaged, without water, without electricity. We have members who have two trees in their houses and they have to, without insurance, and they're being kicked out of hotels. They're being criminalized in their own cities. We hear in Calcasieu Parish, just like in Orleans, that the law enforcement and the National Guard has taken this opportunity to really take to the streets and really sort of impose martial law in those areas. And so after Hurricane Rita, I think for us organizationally, and I imagine a lot of organizations are in the same, you know, in the same situation, it is just so challenging to contribute. It was such an honor to be a part of Community Labor United retreat this weekend, and it was a beautiful thing to see the leadership that was taken and the belief, the understanding that it is the people of New Orleans who must rebuild New Orleans. And I think that so many of the organizations there are struggling with that tension between wanting to be a part of this coalition, build it into the strongest that it can be, and then struggling with just simple capacity. Do we have the funding? Do we have the staff? How do we take care of our membership and find our membership? And so that is an ongoing challenge. We've actually found a number of our members this past week, which was really heartening. We're definitely missing many, but we found several and have just begun sort of working with folks on what their long-term plan is now if they're out of jobs and out of a home. And this will be work that goes on for quite a long time, I can imagine. And speaking on your first question with regards to the folks who are incarcerated, from what we hear, things are just really actually getting worse. I think probably on the last show that I was on, I talked a little bit about the allegations that seem to be reiterated now that Orleans Parish Prison was not properly evacuated, that there are at least 300 folks who are incarcerated who are missing off the DOC rolls, even though the Department of Corrections is saying that everybody was evacuated. We hear, you know, dozens and dozens of prisoners are telling stories of being left with water rising up to their necks, standing for a day with water like that before they were able to break out, and knowing that there were folks that they left behind when they were able to get out. And then to just to add on top of it, now folks have been dispersed across the state, just like everybody who was evacuated. And at the Jenna facility in particular, there are there were a number of filings, complaints of really severe abuse, torture, stun guns, rapes going on in that facility, and there's been a series of lawyers and the incarcerated folks themselves calling for the Department of Justice to take over that facility to end that kind of abuse.
It was sure nice to see y'all there, Soshi, and we appreciated y'all's contribution at the meeting this weekend. I know we ain't supposed to say that on your show, brother.
you can say that. Just to continue on that, Soshi, I got a kind of report back from one of our members who went to the meeting, and they talked about, and I can't remember the woman's name, but she was part of the Angola, she is a part of a committee to free the Angola 3.
Uh-huh.
And her, do you know her name?
Perhaps Shana Griffin?
Yeah, that sounds familiar. Well, the story, not to get into who belongs in prison and who doesn't belong in prison, because that's a whole big debate that we probably agree on, but shouldn't get into now. The story was that her daughter was caught up in something. I don't know what it was, but is now in Angola prison, which is a men's prison, and has been there for a couple weeks, has, her mom has actually paid bail, and they won't release her because they say that the files and all the records and whatnot have been lost or damaged. They can't tell. What are, I mean, this seems like this is just
tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you're going to do this, so I guess my question to you is, what are folks doing about this? They're trying to actually try to get around the whole excuse of like, oh, we can't find the records, we can't do this. Because I'm sure they're going to be able to find the records on credit card bills, right?
That's right.
There was a report from the legal group behind that conversation, and they went and looked at something. And they're probably, as we speak, are starting to file charges. One of the things they're looking at is the violation of anti-slavery laws, where, you know, slavery is still legal in prison. And so by somebody being held in prison, thus slavery, illegally, is a violation of anti-slavery laws. If her bond has been posted, and she's supposed to be released. The other thing is they're moving to, I'm not smart enough to know what they was talking about, but these lawyers, they were going to go and do mute courts in the area and have family members like this woman give them lists of people who were being held. They said it's thousands. Actually, this woman knew of 300 cases of people being held where they're supposed to be released, but they say they don't have their records.
Curtis, I'm going to ask you this question. We have set the goal of trying to raise $20,000 this Thursday night. So, folks, if you're listening out there, bring your 1,000. If just 20 of you come with 1,000, we got this made. You see, we don't even need all the folk. But if you got $20,000, and we at the Strategy Center and Voices, we're committed to raising it, even if we don't get it all that night, we're going to come as close as we can. What would $20,000 buy to help your organization fight the forces of evil?
It's hard to say, Eric. I mean, it's so much that has to be done. We're testing the air and the water and the soil. We got to use some solar. We got people. I understand today the highway, you could hardly travel. People are moving back in the city by the thousands. So we're rushing to test everything. We got architects on the ground looking at structures. We're trying to get our people into some classes to teach them how to deal with possible compromised structures and without hurting themselves. We don't know what the priority is going to be until we can get some folk on the ground and begin to assess what people are trying to get done. We know it's mud sometimes, ankle deep, that's left from the floods. And some of that stuff stinks, smells terribly. We don't know what that is. We do have people sending some testing equipment. We do have some scientists on the ground. But we don't know what we got up against. We don't know what we're up against yet, bro. So we know we got to help people get back. Some people don't have ways to get back. We know we got to get tools to help people. We know we need technicians. We know we need some solar energy. We know we need protective gear for people to work in, the disinfectants and rubber gloves, rubber boots, in some cases, masks. We don't know what all we're going to need until we're finished assessing the damage and the problems. We got counselors coming in. We got some people that have been terribly traumatized. I went in the Houston shelter before they moved the people out, and they had about 300 kids who couldn't find their parents, and they were like from baby, you know, like 3-4 years old all the way up to about 12. Might have been others, but this area they just went from babies to 12. And I'm in here trying to ask the kids stories and getting them to tell me stories, and really all they could do is just sit on your knee and grab you and make you hug them, and the trauma is so tremendous, so we don't know what that's going to be like. You know, we're just starting to touch the surface of what the problems are going to be with these people. Do you know what I mean?
Of course I do. Of course I do. And then we think a lot of the Strategy Center. If, in fact, we have a 7.0 earthquake, which is our next thing coming, and our office was blown off the face of the earth, and if our people were scattered to the winds, and we were trying to both find our own people and make demands on the system. Mm-hmm. So I know that I know two things that you need, if I can be so presumptuous. Mm-hmm. One, you need some staff. Mm-hmm. You need people. A lot of you are working as volunteers
mm-hmm.
with no money of your own.
That's right.
Some of people have no apartments you know, moving from apartment to apartment.
That's right.
You need to rebuild your offices.
That's right.
You need computers and faxes and phones.
You sure know, bro.
Right? So we know you need that. And we know that $20,000 just begins to scratch the surface. So,
that's right.
And the other thing we know is that you need years of, a lot of people are going to think that the New Orleans issue is like maybe another 2 months,
mm-hmm.
and then they're going to move on to something.
That's right.
But you need people that are going to stay with you for the long haul.
That's right.
And I'm obviously speaking to our audience here, which is, folks, listen, come out this Thursday night, October 6th.
7 p.m.
at the Emmanuel Presbyterian Church.
It's kind of like a duet.
Yeah, that's right.
3300 Wilshire Boulevard. That's at the corner of Berendo, which is two blocks to the west of Vermont.
Bring $5 to get in. Bring your checkbook, your credit card. Come to hear Xochitl discuss more about the prison system and the work that Flick is doing. Come hear Curtis. They'll both be here in person. And I know that on a radio show, they're just beginning to scratch the surface. And one of the things that we can have a conversation about is how can we have a permanent Friends of the New Orleans movement built at that meeting when Thursday night. So it'll be a revival, but it'll also be a serious organizing evening. Last word, Curtis. Last word, Xochitl. Get these folks out there. Tell them directly why they got to come.
Go ahead, Xochitl.
Well, I guess I would start off by saying, you know, people need to come because this is, you know, the crisis that we've all been watching, some of us come closer up and some of us from afar, it is something that this nation is not going to heal from for a long time, and that we have choices to make. This country can skip over it, and our movement can allow that to happen, to brush under the rug and act as if, you know, that was a freak accident or something that won't be repeated, or we can take this opportunity, we can seize the opportunity to really push this government and this country's people who, like Mr. Curtis said, with the hatred and a disregard for poor black people, we have an opportunity to really change that, to really confront it, to really challenge it with all of our strength. And we need all of us to do that. And for those of us, we get lots of calls to say, you know, we want to take the lead of the people who are on the ground. We want, you know, what do you all need? And like you said, we're struggling too. We're struggling just to have a place to live or to find an office or to get our staff together, to get our membership together. We need help from across this movement, from across this country and internationally, if we're really going to be able to pull this moment together and do what we need to do.
Well, I just want to remind people that we've been going to California since runaway time. Even before slavery ended, California was our destination. A lot of New Orleans families live in Los Angeles right now. A lot of people, black people who live in Los Angeles, come from New Orleans. For me, I'm coming out to visit family, and I expect my family to want to see us and hear us. I think California, particularly Los Angeles, have a unique responsibility to this struggle. And I amen, Xochitl, and we're going to keep talking about that because we, part of the trauma that we are having is our government and many of our people deserted us and left us to die. And this is our chance now to reclaim ourselves as one people, as one human family, and really reproduce a different paradigm for how we deal with black and poor people in America.
Well, we want to thank both Curtis and Xochitl for, one, being on the show, but then also coming down to Los Angeles this coming Thursday, the 6th, Emmanuel Presbyterian Church, 3300 Wilshire, 7 o'clock at the corner of Berendo. And I guess the other thing I want to say before we go to break is that also at that same event, Eric, a co-host here, is going to be launching the document that he's been spending the last 3 weeks on, called A Letter in the Support of the Movement in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. And I was on an earlier show on KPFK a couple days ago and gave out a website, and at that point it hasn't been up. So you should go to www.frontlinespress.com forontlinespress.com. That's forontlinespress. So I want to thank both of you again, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Thank you. Thank you.
Take good care, sister. Take good care, brother.
And we'll be right back with Saladin Muhammad after the break.